Well, welcome, my friends. This is Pastor Butch Paul filling in for Melody Cedarstrom today on her program, Financial Survival. And the reason she's not here is technical difficulties. The storm is hitting her area right now, and she had some problems with the powers. Then she still has problems with the internet and getting Skype up and different things. So she asked me to fill in the day the best I can, and I'll do the best I can. I'm not Melody Cedarstrom. I'm not an expert in the area she talks about a lot, but I do the best I can for a hillbilly preacher. How's that? Is that offer that to you? We're going to cover some news, and this first 20 minutes is a live segment. The next segments from 20 after to the top of the hour will be recorded. It's a Jeff Corbett program, so you're going to want to hear that. You don't want to miss that. So with Melody and Jeff, but we're going to discuss some things you and I for a while, and then we'll go from there. But I'll do the best I can. Don't forget, folks, to call Melody. I mean, seriously, call her and plan for your future. I don't know how many new listeners we have every day. I'm sure we have some. And maybe some of the things we say doesn't seem important right now. But if you'll take time to think, think and look at the past few years and look what's coming, looks like it's looming in the future, you might see the importance and the absolute necessity of planning for something beyond what we're doing right now. You call her at 800-375-4188, 800-375-4188, and talk about how maybe she can help you protect some of your assets and some of your goods that you're going to need in the future, okay? Now, I'm not good at the Dow, at the market report as Melody is, but I'll do what I can to cover it, okay? The Dow, by the way, was up today about almost 100 points at 26,827. The NASDAQ was up lower 3 points at 81.20. The S&P up lower 6 points at 29.82. Oil was up by about 0.9% at 56.58. And unfortunately, gold took another little hit today. Yeah, it did. Down to 15.13.10. It lost about 16% today. And folks, don't panic. Just a few months ago, it was 12 something. So understand, you're still 250 bucks ahead of what you were 3 months ago. And this downward turn will not last. It will not last. And we'll discuss many reasons why in a minute, but it's not going to last. And silver also took a hit today. The low for silver today was $17.92. The high was $18.90. It settled out to $18.13 an ounce. That still keeps silver eagles about 20 bucks a piece. And when I started buying them years ago, they were $3 a piece, my friends. Now, if I would have had the money to invest heavily back then, as I wish I could have, my goodness, the return would have been phenomenal. Phenomenal. So silver and gold are still assets that never go valueless as the dollar and other paper assets will. They always have some intrinsic value, if nothing else. So you call Melody and ask her questions. Listen, I don't have all the answers on what you should buy and how much you should buy, but she does. I trust Melody Cedarstrom absolutely completely with anything I need to talk to about finances and what I can buy, when I can afford it, what I need to do. You call her at 800-375-4188. And I want to cover something here. It's kind of on the lighter side, I guess, before getting into real serious thing, but I think you'll find this interesting. I did. A survey has found that a third of parents' favorite child is their pet. I just put $280 in mine again today. I have a terrier Shih Tzu mix, showed up on my front yard about 11 years ago. Getting old now. He's getting some age on him. I found out later on that a guy that I knew dropped him off here and didn't say anything to me till later. I did my best to give that dog away for a month. Nobody wanted him. He kind of wormed his way into my heart, and Marsha wanted him right away. When she saw him, she wanted to keep him, but I didn't. But after a month, I couldn't get rid of him. He's the most intelligent dog I ever owned. I must say, a loving dog, and to tell you the truth, I can see why a third of the parents may say they want the dog, the pet, over their children, because he listens better than any of my three sons did to what I say. But I thought you'd find that amusing. 34% of the parents surveyed said they prefer that their pet over as their favorite child. Just want to share it with you. And now that he's here, he's settled in. I wouldn't give $5 for him to come here. I'd probably get $3,000 him since he come here. With he's the only dog I ever saw that has allergies so bad. At least four times a year, I take him to the vet to get shots and different things to keep his allergies away. And we tried all kinds of natural remedies. So far, nothing's worked. But I thought I'd share it with you. If you love your pet, sometimes more than you think you love your real child, it's understandable. I can go along with that. I can see that. But you know, folks, this if you have a heart, you're going to love animals. At least I do. Yeah, I do hunt, and I eat beef, and I eat deer. I eat turkey, wild turkey, I do. I'm not a vegetarian. Matter of fact, I found that vegetarians are more likely to have a stroke than meat eaters. Now, that's a fact. Check it out for yourself. Vegetarians have a higher percentage of strokes than meat eaters do. So meat doesn't hurt you. It's ordained of God Almighty for us to eat. But nonetheless, I like animals. I do. I see deer in my yard all the time. I just had three little fawns right beside my office window just a little while ago. Now, let's move on to some serious stuff. I want to share that with you. So if you feel like you love your pet more sometimes than you do that boy or girl that's tearing the front room up for a little bit, it's understandable. It'll be okay. This is an article is entitled Explainer U.S. China More Divided. U.S. China More Divided Than Ever as New Trade Talks Loom. Everybody got hopes for this trade talks to go through. Well, according to Reuters, it isn't going to happen right away. Senior U.S. and Chinese officials have pledged to meet in October to settle their ongoing trade war, but a lasting peace seems more elusive than ever, yet the market is climbing on the hopes that there's going to be a trade agreement. Since trade negotiations began between the world's largest economies broke down in May, both countries have added tariffs on billions of dollars of others' goods, broken good faith promises, and traded public insults. Washington accused Beijing of reneging on commitments to change its laws to enact economic reforms, while Beijing called U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs barbaric. Leaders from both countries are now vowing a long fight despite slowing domestic economies. There's no doubt this is hurting our economy, and I'm going to share part of that with you in a second. And I'm sure it's hurting Chinese economy. I know it is. And I've said this many times, I'll say it again. If we could wean off imports and learn how to take care of ourselves, we could have a much stronger, much more prosperous nation, a much more secure nation, and the fact that we can feed ourselves. Wouldn't that be a great idea to be able to do that? I think so. But farm delinquencies surge in U.S. election battleground, in the U.S. election battleground in Wisconsin. Farm loan delinquency rose to a record high in June at Wisconsin's community banks, data showed on Thursday, a sign President Donald Trump's trade conflicts with China and other countries are hitting farmers hard in a state that could be crucial for his chance of re-election in 2020. The share of farm loans that are long past due rose 2.9% at community banks in Wisconsin as of June 30th, the highest rate in comparable records that go back to 2001, according to Reuters, analysis of loan delinquency data published by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. While the number of seriously delinquent farm loans is rising nationwide, the non-current rate has more than doubled at Wisconsin community banks since Trump took office in January 2017. It now stands higher than any other of the top U.S. farm states as measured in production, a list that includes California, Iowa, and Texas. I don't know what to say about that. I don't know. Tariffs can be good. It can be. But obviously it's costing somebody here a livelihood. Maybe causing some people to lose farms. I don't know, folks. But that, you know, when we allowed our so-called government to open the doors through NAFTA and GATT and other trade deals to start importing more than we export and start importing more goods than we produce ourselves for ourselves, we open the gate to this kind of problem right here. To wean the people and the finances, the economic situation off the idea of trade, where we can't afford to buy and they can't afford to buy from us, it hurts. It's like trying to, after 5 years of a child on a pacifier, you decide to take it from them, they're going to pitch a fit, and it's going to be hard. But this is beyond that, because this is actually hurting people's finances. it should not have been allowed to happen in the first place. If we will keep our trade as we should right here. But you know, Ross Perot, if y'all remember him, warned us there'll be a big sucking sound if all these trade deals went through. That our economy will be sucked right out of this country. And it has been. We have no one to blame but ourselves. A lot of folks are suffering now, though, weren't even alive or old enough to do anything about it back in the 80s. But it happened nonetheless. And it just breaks my heart, folks. It does. Listen, I'm only a mortal. I'm only a man. I hate to see anybody. I hate to see an animal suffering, much less an individual. I watch these commercials on TV about the Humane Society. It makes me angry. I turn it off. Not because, I mean, it hurts me to see the animal suffer. It does. But the Humane Society shows suffering puppies while we murder 4,000 babies a day. Talk about hypocritical. Record 157,878,000 unemployed in August. Now, folks, this is America. Record low unemployment rate is unbelievable. I mean, it is unbelievable. The number of people employed in the United States hit a record 157,878,000 in August. The 21st record set under President Donald Trump, according to the employment rate released today by Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's an increase of 590,000 from the record of 158,228,000 employed in July. Wow. That's sad. That's over half the population, better. And I know a lot of children, but we're talking about working adults here. Unemployed. Okay, business is booming. Economy's booming. If you're unemployed, you have bills to pay. What can you do about it? But on the good side, I guess you say, black unemployment hits record low. Black-white unemployment gap shrinks to smallest ever. The unemployment rate for African Americans fell to the lowest level ever recorded in August, dropping from 6% to 5.5%. The unemployment ratio has averaged around 2-1 or so for decades, meaning the black unemployment rate is typically twice the white unemployment rate. In good times, the unemployment rate of whites and blacks falls, but the gap remains. In the bad times, the unemployment rate for whites and blacks rises, but black unemployment typically remains around twice that of a white employment. So blacks, Trump wasn't lying. More blacks are working today than when he took office. You know, that's nothing to be sneezed at. I mean, I'm not, yeah, we're talking about massive unemployment, period. But these folks, you know, thank God, got a little bit maybe a break in some areas. And I'll say this right up front. I don't care what color your skin is. If you do the job and you do it well, you deserve decent pay. If you can do the job, you can do it well, you deserve to be hired. I'm getting so sick of blacks versus whites and whites versus blacks and both against Hispanics and on goes. I understand a lot of things, folks, about race and the problems. I truly do. I understand that blacks kill more blacks than whites ever thought about doing. I understand all that. I understand the ratio of prison is for blacks is way beyond whites. I understand that also, but that makes beside the point. An individual, no matter what color your skin is, that can do a job and do it well, deserves good pay and a chance to work. It's just that easy. So I'm tickled to see this. I truly am. For whatever it's worth, I'm glad to see that happen. And this next article, I think, is a little bit, maybe slightly scary, if you live in Arizona anyway. Air Force jet accidentally fires rocket into Arizona desert. No one was injured, but an A-10C Warthog unintentionally released a phosphorus smoke rocket about halfway between Phoenix and Tucson, the Air Force said. They're investigating how this happened. It accidentally released a single M-156 rocket. So, you know, I'm laughing. It's not funny. If that would have fell on a populated area, that could have been a nasty, nasty thing, could it not? I have no problem. I understand the military is, I guess, a little bit necessary, although a standing army, according to our founding fathers, it was a bane to liberty, and I can certainly see that. Especially when I see that they're trying to disarm the people as they are right now in this country and take away our only means of defense. Now, I'm going to say this as best I can, and I hope you get it right. Small arms in America. Now, I'm not saying we can all own a tank or a rocket launcher. That's not what I'm saying. But the civilian section of this country should be equally armed in small arms to the military. I don't care. ARs, AKs, I don't care what they are. Whenever the military and police are allowed to have any type of small arms, we can't have because we're dangerous with them. We lose our liberty and we'll probably lose our lives and our livelihood soon. When we're outgunned, folks, we are outclassed, so to speak. If you read the Second Amendment, if you have or not, I don't know whether you have or not, you'll find out it doesn't mention hunting at all. In order to keep a free state. So we see these things. I mean, the military's out there. They have arms that we certainly couldn't have because we can't afford for one or two. But when they start disarming us on small arms, that is not good. Remember what happened back in March 2011 when Fukushima nuclear plant was flooded and what happened? You probably want to hear this. Japan set to dump contaminated Fukushima water into ocean as storage runs out. This is not a good story. By the way, the radiation has already killed a lot of the life in the Pacific Ocean. I'm serious. It's all along the West Coast and spreading across the country. You can check it out for yourself. Go online, look it up. The Fukushima plant accident, or whatever you want to call it, is spreading across the country. It's polluting the sea, the ocean, and now America. So this is not good news. Countries are gathering to prevent Japan from dumping nuclear waste from the Fukushima power plant disaster into the ocean. The plant suffered a catastrophic meltdown with a 6.6 magnitude earthquake shook the region in 2011. A tsunami then swamped the nuclear reactors and triggered a massive radiation leak. Tokyo Electric is currently running out of tank space as the plant used to store water waste. Excuse me, I had to sneeze. It expects the storage will be taken up by the mid-2022 and is actively seeking alternatives, one which is reportedly the ocean. Oh, wow. Store it up. Yeah, just to protect the ocean, but then dump it all out in the ocean. Duh, go for it. The South Korean government has now sent a letter to the International Atomic Energy Agency in opposition to the move, and good for them. Folks, our oceans are so polluted now, it's unbelievable with so much debris. But the dump radioactive material into the ocean cannot be good for the environment. South Korea has offered them every fine ways to help them store the water, so that's a good thing. It's a good thing. Not about a lot of time for this segment. Next segment will be a recorded segment with Melody and Jeff, so you're going to hear that. In the meantime, don't forget to call Melody, please, at 800-375-4188. Thank you for allowing me to come into your front room today and fumble through this, do the best I can. I can't take Melody's place, but I'll do what I can to be here if I can help her in any way, and you all too. Again, call her 800-375-4188. Hear music playing, and I guess I will see you next Monday with Melody with another live broadcast. Have a great weekend.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, founder and editor of The Corbett Report. Founded in 2007, and in 2012, James became the editorial writer for the International Forecaster, and of course that was founded by our good friend and economist Bob Chapman. Now, you can visit James's website at thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com, and you can also request a complimentary copy of the International Forecaster by going to their website, and of course that is theinternationalforecaster.com. Hello, James.
Hello, Melody. Good to talk to you again.
Same here. I always enjoy it. And, you know, it seems like it's a slow news week after the extensive reporting on Hurricane Dorian. You know, we talked a little bit about that before we came on. And so before we touch on, you know, a couple of your recent articles, there's some interesting developments around the world, and it's you know, we talked about some of these earlier in the week, so I'm just looking for your insight on some of the things that have happened. And one, of course, is the other day, the Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, said that she has withdrawn a contentious extradition bill that had sparked months of mass and increasingly violent protests. Do you think that Xi, Lam, or mainland China will agree to all of their five demands that these protesters are fighting?
It's an excellent question, and I don't know because I haven't even seen the demands. So that's how much I've been following this story, apparently not closely enough. I do see, here's the thing that's interesting to me, is that my understanding was that it was months ago at this point that the proposed extradition treaty, which was supposedly the thing that set off all these protests in the first place, had been shelved. And I understood they hadn't withdrawn it completely, but they were shelving it and saying they weren't going to pursue it now. And then the protests continued. So I guess you're saying that they have completely withdrawn that 100%. So I guess that is, to my mind, that was supposedly what these protests were about. But of course they're about the bigger issue of who really controls Hong Kong. And it's another one of these situations where it's not so clear in any direction. I mean, of course, one can understand if you're a Hong Konger not wanting to be under the thumb of Beijing, but whose thumb are you going to be under? And there's aspects to local governance in Hong Kong that are unique with regards to who can actually own property there, and you have this kind of clique oligarchy of property owners who de facto kind of own and run Hong Kong, who stand to benefit from some sort of status quo of Beijing doesn't, this is a special autonomous region. So it's not necessarily that these are people who are going to be getting freedom in any sort of literal sense, no matter how this pans out. But of course, this has become a much bigger issue now, and now it's essentially a part of the proxy war between China and the U.S., which is why we see the U.S. Diplomats meeting with some of the Hong Kong protest leaders and other imagery like that, which makes it into this bigger political thing. So I haven't kept up with every development of it, and so I certainly can't offer any informed opinion about how things are going to proceed from here, other than to say that this is going to be part of the much broader narrative that I've been looking at more generally for the last several years about the coming civilizational war that they're trying to amp up and create between the U.S. and China.
Well, I found it fascinating that these people, the protesters, have actually accomplished, at least in part. And I don't know if it's just me, and you know, maybe it's no big deal, maybe it's just me, but I kind of find it fascinating that you have so many people that were able to accomplish at least their main goal without firing a shot. And so have we learned, has it, they kind of shown the world what can be done in this way? And then also, have we also learned something about China? Has China only been silenced temporarily, or is this just, did China lose the battle but not the war? As you mentioned, you know, this is a much bigger picture and so forth. Or are these just my little...
Well, I don't think China wants to roll into Hong Kong with the military with guns blazing, because they obviously know what that is going to play like internationally, i.e. exactly like Tiananmen Square 30 plus years ago, which we talked about recently in one of my recent articles. And that, I think, is obviously the type of calculus they're making here. I don't think, as you say, they may lose this battle in a certain sense, but the bigger question is about the war. And I think it would probably lose them the war if they did roll in with military, which is why I did not expect that to happen in this particular instance. I guess things can spiral out of control or can go in a completely different direction, which might necessitate some sort of... But I think what you're saying, the fact that these peaceful protests have accomplished so much of what they set out to accomplish, is a testament to the fact that Beijing has been hands-off and has been allowing Carrie Lam and the Hong Kong governing executive to do their thing, more or less. And yes, there's been the menace and the massing of troops on the border and that kind of thing, but they have not come in guns blazing, and I think that speaks to that situation. I would contrast that to something in say, the United States. Do you think this type of mass protest movement would be really possible in the United States? And I think there's a million ways that this could be undermined or derailed, but we saw some of them testing out some of the protest control technology at the G20 in Pittsburgh back in 2009. You might not remember it, but that was where they started to roll out these LRAD sound cannons and other such devices to basically make sure that they could control, contain, and otherwise disable any sort of protest before it reached any critical mass or anything even approaching that. And that's where we saw these bizarre things that seemed to be, they seemed to be staged incidents for the cameras, but at any rate, there were people being plucked out of the crowds and hustled into the back of unmarked cars by plainclothes officers of some sorts, being abducted on the street in front of all the press cameras and being driven off at high speed. These bizarre scenes that were playing out at the G20 Pittsburgh, I think that was part of the conditioning towards we are now in the police state, which is why I think these types of mass peaceful protests would not really be possible in the U.S. context or in a lot of the other countries that have militarized their police to such an extent.
Boris Johnson, the new prime minister, he's called for a national election on October 15th. Brexit deal is supposed to be done the 31st, I believe, if I remember correctly. He says it's the only way out of Britain's Brexit impasse for opposition lawmakers that moved the other day to block his plan. Are there other forces at work here that we don't see or is reported on? More importantly, could a no-deal Brexit bring on a recession or worse?
Yeah, well, just cast Does your mind back a couple of years to when this vote took place, the original Brexit vote, and you had all of the economists, whatever it was, 100-plus economists lining up to say this will be the end of Britain as we know it if you vote yes or whatever rhetoric they were spewing at that time. And, you know, lo and behold, that didn't quite play out, at least has not yet played out. But I'm sure they can blame any future financial apocalypse on the people daring to suggest that the UK should not be part of the EU. Oh, how dare you. Again, this is a developing story, and I haven't been following every twist and turn, but my understanding is that Parliament did approve a bill by a vote of 327 to 229 to prevent Boris Johnson from pulling out of the EU without a deal. And then they voted 298 to 56 to stop Johnson essentially calling for a new election over this, calling for a snap election. So apparently that's not going to go ahead. Again, we're getting into the thick of the weeds with regards to British parliamentary politics and the games that are being played back and forth in, ahead of this October 31st deadline, as you say. How this is going to play out, again, trust me, I've got my popcorn ready. I'm just as interested in as everyone else. Essentially, I remain where I've been for a very long time on this. I'll believe Brexit when I see it. I certainly don't think the EU or any of the ensconced political globalist interests in the UK and elsewhere are going to just allow this to happen. How dare you think that the plebs out there can just cast a ballot and get out of the EU just like that? No. So I, again, I'm not believing this is going to happen until I actually see it taking place. And then I would be bracing for some sort of financial controlled demolition in order to blame on the Brexit would probably be the next step there.
Again, there's reports, and I guess I'm all over the page here, though, but that Japan is trying to reassure foreign diplomats about your own public about safety at Fukushima, at the nuclear plant. I guess there's concerns about massive amounts of treated but radioactive water that is stored in tanks. There's a lot of information. What's the update? And, you know, what's your insights, your views on this matter?
The update is that things are very much where they've been for a long time. As you say, there is radioactive water that's accruing as the groundwater flows through the site. And so far, they've collected, I believe, 1 million tons of water in nearly 1,000 tanks. But they have released, they've gone ahead with and planned more release of some of that water that they've treated and said is safe. It's now below acceptable levels. So now they're bringing in the diplomats. 22 different countries and regions attended a briefing at the foreign ministry, apparently, basically to see hear how this is all good and don't worry, everything's okay. And I think this is part of the big diplomatic push that's taking place ahead of the 2020 Olympics. That's, I imagine, what a lot of this is being staged for, because, of course, it's all going to be, oh, no, don't worry, there's no problems, everything's good, you can send all your people here, you know, tourists, please come to Japan. And they're, I think they're even holding certain events in Fukushima.
Really?
So, yeah, as part of the PR, don't worry, everything's safe. And it would not surprise me in the least in 2021 or 2022 suddenly, oh, you know what? Actually, it turns out things are a lot worse than we thought. But I have thought for a long time they are going to, as much as possible, put the lid on this and contain any bad news from coming out before those Olympics.
Yeah, absolutely. One of your recent newsletters, and I find this kind of interesting, you wrote about it's good to be king of Thailand. King Rama the 10th of Thailand, you advise your readers that under the Thai criminal code, it's illegal to defame, insult, or threaten the king, the queen, the heir apparent, or the regent. They're prosecuted in Thailand all the time for having the audacity to insult His Royal Highness. What prompted you to write about this topic?
I guess the key prompt for me was watching the footage of the royal consort, basically the king's girlfriend, being promoted to this royal noble consort title. And of course, if you've seen the footage of it, she's wearing the pink dress suit, literally lying down at the king's feet, groveling as he hands her various shiny baubles, exactly as you may have seen earlier this year when the king appointed his queen. In, I think, May, and exactly the same type of footage with her groveling at his feet, essentially. And it just struck me as a particularly galling image of, I mean, this is the thing. So many of the oligarchical structures are set up with modern sensibilities in mind that they don't offend our modern sensibilities by putting it in our face that they rule over us and they are our literal lords and we should worship them. But there are things like this where you see it from, and of course it's from a different cultural context, and I'm not Thai and I didn't grow up there and everything. I'm sure it looks all normal and well and okay in Thailand. It doesn't to me, and that's that sort of awareness. Oh, this isn't right. At least you can call it out when you see it. And I find the interesting part about this is, as you say, I wrote about this in the Forecaster recently, just calling attention to Section 112 of the Thai Criminal Code, which literally makes illegal defaming, insulting, or threatening the king, the queen, the heir apparent, or the regent, or, by the way, the king's dog. Yes, there's a man who's ending up facing jail time because he had the audacity to insult the king's king's dog. There is another person who is facing jail time, a YouTuber, because she made an insult about the princess's dress. Again, don't even insult their clothing. or you will end up in jail. And that's just so galling, so horrible, anathema to everything that I stand for, that I did want to call attention to it. And I find it funny. I've written several forecasters and other things in the past about the British royal family and how disgusting and despicable that display of pomp and pageantry and we rule over you is to me and to my sensibility. And I've never, ever had a single person kick back against that in my audience. But I had a lot of people in my audience going, why are you talking about the Thai government? What kind of government would you like to institute? Why are you threatening? I just found that weird that there are people out there who would defend literally making it illegal to insult this hallowed being who sits on the clouds above us all. And that's perfectly fine, James. And who are you to say that that's not what the Thai people should be doing? Well, fair enough. I'm not making rules for Thailand, but I'm just saying, as a human being, to have it literally enshrined in law that you can not insult me or my family because we are above you, plebes, is disgusting and despicable. And anyone who would defend that is certainly not of my ilk.
Well, you know, I don't know, James, if anybody says anything bad about my dog, Ruby.
you did that voice very well. It was very convincing, actually.
But you know what? This is, you're right. People accept that behavior. It's amazing. They'll accept the behavior, just like the queen and that deal. They accept and admire to some degree, but yet then you take these other places where basically they're doing the same thing but just at a different level, and there's all kinds of outrage. It's I don't know if you follow that when I'm trying to come
maybe.
Down there.
Maybe not.
Well, don't say that on the radio, James. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, people, you know, think that, you know, how can you write about that? How can you say that about these people and so forth? And they support these people, but yet then in the next breath they're...
Right. Yes. And it's usually cloaked in some sort of, well, it's all cultural relativism and we can't dare make a judgment about someone else's culture. But again, no person has a problem when I say such things about the British royal family. I just find that an interesting phenomenon. But a deeper point is that, of course, we are expected to worship and exalt our leaders just in a different way and not quite so overtly as happens in, you know, with royal families and what have you.
Well, we're just about ready to go into our break right now. I was trying to stretch that out because when we come back, we're going to talk about the plunge protection team. So please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. And thank you for joining us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
One more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every...
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two Black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my guest, James Corbett, and the founder and editor of The Corbett Report. And please visit his website, thecorbettreport.com, thecorbettreport.com. Well, heading into the break, I announced that we were going to talk about the Plunge Protection Team, your most recent article on the corbettreport.com. And, I mean, our listeners are familiar. I think a lot of folks are familiar with the Plunge Protection Team. But it's been a while since I talked and covered this the topic. We like to bring it up every now and then. And I am very much interested in what you wrote about, and I would like you to share with the listeners your article.
Sure. Well, for just to get everyone on board in case they haven't heard of it, this is formally known as the Working Group on Financial Markets. And this was a group that was set up under an executive order signed off on by Reagan in March of 1988. And their formal mandate, and specifically this is the Treasury Secretary and or his appointee, the Fed Chair, the Chair of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the Chair of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Those four people make up this Working Group on Financial Markets. And their specific mandate at the time was to consult as appropriate with representatives of the various exchanges, clearinghouses, self-regulatory bodies, and with major market participants to determine private sector solutions to the crisis that they saw in 1987 with Black Monday and the 87 stock market scare. So that was the formal creation of this group. But that sounds innocuous enough. It was a group that was set up specifically to basically research and report back to the president ideas about how to mitigate those types of stock scares. But of course, the group didn't disband at that point. It, in fact, still exists. And we know that because it was recently called together by current Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin and reported on in Reuters, which was odd, and I hadn't seen done in the past. I mean, I know the group exists and that it meets, but I'd never seen a meeting of the Working Group on Financial Markets announced in the media like that. But anyway, the question really is, okay, so how do we get from there to the Plunge Protection Team? Well, one way to do that is in 1997, the Washington Post ran an article about this, what they termed the Plunge Protection Team. That was their colloquial term for this Working Group on Financial Markets. And of course, as the name implies, as their moniker implies, this is not just some innocuous group that's just researching about the market. No, they are actively intervening in markets to make sure that they can maintain smooth operations during time of crisis. So that Washington Post article from 97 is interesting. People should go and read through it. It is kind of bizarre in some ways, though, because they make it clear there is this Working Group on Financial Markets. They meet in secret. They have these secret contingency plans about how to keep markets functioning during times of crisis. But they don't really give you any detail whatsoever about how that would actually be accomplished. They give you all these peripheral details like, oh, the SEC's contingency plan has a red cover, so it's called the Red Book and things like this. But, yeah, oh, that's very nice. But no, but how are they going to keep the markets functioning during crisis? What are they actually going to do? Which is something of an open-ended question that may have been answered in 1989. That was when Robert Heller, who was at that time the outgoing chair of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors, he wrote an article, an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, said, have Fed support stock market too? And his essential thesis there was that the circuit breakers that they set up in the markets to stop trading in the event of some cataclysmic plunge like Black Monday 87 was not going to be enough to actually prevent another panic. And he said, well, what we should do is we should give the Federal Reserve the job of preventing chaos in the markets. And his idea was essentially to have the Fed purchase stock futures contracts, buying into the indices during sell-offs in order to prop things up and stop, basically stave off a major loss. Now, there was a reporter, John Crudell, who picked up on that at the time and has been writing about it for decades since and continues to write about it to this very day, basically saying that Heller op-ed in the Wall Street Journal in 1989 wasn't just some vague wish list, oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could do this? No, no, it was him basically saying, we are doing this. Get used to it, markets. And he, that's been his thesis, and he's been writing about this, as I say, for decades. One example, one very obvious example that we could point to, 2001, of course, in the wake of 9/11, who's going to want to invest in the markets in the wake of 9/11? Of course they're going to plunge. Of course there's going to be a huge loss. How are they going to prop it up? Well, at that time, in fact, specifically on September 17th of 2001, our good old friend George Stephanopoulos appeared on ABC's Good Morning America to basically spill the beans. And he said specifically, the Fed in 1989 created, again, asterisk that, the Fed in 1989 created what is called the Plunge Protection Team, which is the Federal Reserve, big major banks, representatives of the New York Stock Exchange and the other exchanges, and they've been meeting informally so far. And they have a kind of an informal agreement among major banks to come in and start to buy stock if there appears to be a problem. And then he points to the long-term capital crisis back in 1998, which was staved off by the Plunge Protection Team. And he was basically saying, and that's what they're going to do now in the wake of 9/11. Some interesting things there that he's letting slip. One is that this isn't that working group on financial markets that was created in that executive order in 88, which, again, was 1988. He's talking about the Fed in 1989 creating the Plunge Protection Team. Is he referring to what Robert Heller was writing about in the 1989 op-ed? And it seems to be a slightly different constituency. In this case, it's the Fed, the big major banks, the representative of the New York Stock Exchange and other exchanges. So this is an amorphous term that gets thrown around. I think it's more of an affiliation than it is a specific group of people, but obviously it involves the major bankers and the major financiers on Wall Street, as well as the Fed and the Treasury and what have you. And they are clearly collaborating to prop up markets. And we can see this in action in various places. Case in point, February 5th, 2018, you had what was a nightmare scenario that the Washington Post article in 97 was talking about the working group on financial markets, the Plunge Protection Team, were preparing for. Namely, you had a 1,600-point drop on the day on the Dow Jones after a 666-point decline the previous Friday. Make of that number what you will. And so, you know, the markets are clearly plunging. But then, miraculously, late in the afternoon, someone started, quote, arbitrarily and aggressively buying stocks and halved the loss. And, you know, who was this mystery buyer who came in the late afternoon to prop up the markets? Well, it was the Plunge Protection Team. And in fact, that was pointed out not only in the blogosphere, but even the mainstream press were pointing that out at the time. And then in December of last year, you had Steve Mnuchin, the Trump's Treasury Secretary, announcing that meeting of the president's working group on financial matters, the Plunge Protection Team, right at the time that was announced on Christmas Eve of 2018. The first trading day after that announcement was the 27th. And what do you know? That very trading day, late afternoon, a mysterious rally started to levitate the markets and basically bring them up on the day after a plunging loss in the morning. Again, wow, what a coincidence, right after the Plunge Protection Team was called in. So, again, make of it what you will, I think it's pretty obvious that this is one of the mechanisms that they wield to prop up the markets. And if that Heller article in 89 from the Wall Street Journal is anything to go by, that may be one of the mechanisms they use, the buying into the stock indices. So they're not buying stocks themselves, they're just buying futures contracts in order to prop up the market and make sure that it doesn't go into red territory.
But how long can they continue to do this? I guess that's the $64 million question. Everybody thinks that they're going to run out of steam. There was an article that was produced a couple of months ago where the Fed is already trying to put together a new program. So if things begin to unfold, they'll institute, you know, some new quantitative easing that they haven't, you know, actually figured it out yet and so forth. So they're already creating new investment programs and so forth to keep this stuff going. It's just like, it's, nobody cares.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the things that strikes me about this. Yeah. So I often kick that can down the road when you put it to me, you know, how long can they keep doing this? Well, there is an answer to that, and the specific answer is precisely as long as the U.S. dollar remains the reserve currency, the world reserve currency. As long as the U.S. dollar is the world reserve currency, they can play with it at, like funny money, as they do, to their heart's content, and they will be able to keep the system going. But at that point at which the U.S. dollar loses its world reserve currency status and something else is anointed as the world reserve currency, suddenly the piper will come calling to be paid, and it will not be pretty for the United States. And that's the situation we're in with, oh, lo and behold, Bank of England Governor Mark Carney coming along saying that that basically the status quo cannot hold and should not hold. We need to change the game is one of the quotes from his recent address, lunchtime address to the Jackson Hole Conference, the annual banker conclave. And he was saying that we need to have a new global currency, something like a Libra, he threw out there. Of course, the Facebook quasi, not really, cryptocurrency that obviously has been launched recently. He was saying something like that, maybe. He also did say the renminbi could be another contender, but not yet. And I think he's right about that. It would be years down the road, the renminbi. There'd have to be significant liberalization of Chinese markets, etc., and opening up before it could possibly be, even act as a world reserve currency. But at any rate, he was saying, essentially, U.S. dollar, there's a, you know, your number's up, and it's going to come sooner or later. And I think this is what I've been saying for a while. It's what a lot of people have been saying. This isn't particularly prognostication, but the fact that it's coming from powerful central banker Mark Carney is room for this is an alarm bell, basically, of one sort or another, saying that they're getting ready to do this. This is not, you know, off in the far distance. They are going to do this. And at that point, when that changeover takes place, then obviously the Fed can print all the funny money that they want. But if no one's willing to hold it, then you know, it's just going to inflate into nothing. And at that point, you look at the inflationary collapse scenario.
Well, I have a quick question, Ron. I want to move on to 9/11 when we're running out of time. But my question is, I heard this evening, everybody, there was a program I was listening on the news. They were talking about, oh, the United States is now energy dependent. You know, we no longer have those strong ties to the Saudis and so forth. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yes, we do. It's the dollar.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that has to be broken. And I think, you know, if it's no longer oil, then how is the U.S. still tied? I mean, what are we... You know, I mean,
it's an excellent question, especially as the entire, as you know, the manufacturing base of the United States is completely offshored. No one's buying any American products anymore, so there's nothing fundamental physical underlying anything. And if you remove oil from the equation, then there isn't even another entire part of the system that's being taken away. So what have you got left? Financial wizardry, essentially. Well, New York is a financial hub, but does that crown something as the world reserve currency in and of itself? Well, U.S. has the biggest military with hundreds of military bases on foreign lands all around the world. Is it going to be held up at the point of a gun? Well, for some length of time, sure, but not forever. And that's the real question.
Well, let's talk about 9/11. We're approaching that date. You said there was a new study about 9/11. Would you like to tell us about it, please?
Yes, the University of Alaska Fairbanks, a researcher at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, has just come out with a re-evaluation of the WTC-7 collapse. And I imagine maybe some people in your audience are familiar with that, but for people who aren't, World Trade Center Building 7 was the third building to fall, collapse, be destroyed on 9/11, specifically at 5:20 p.m., so 5:20 in the afternoon. But no, of course, World Trade Center Building 7 was not hit by an airplane, and it's sometimes called the smoking gun of 9/11 because it is, show it to, you know, 100 people, 99 of them will immediately say, oh, that building was demolished. No, well, officially, no, it wasn't demolished. It was ordinary office fires that brought this 47-story steel-framed office tower down completely into its own footprint at gravitational acceleration, which, for people who don't know anything about anything, is nonsense. It has always been nonsense. NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, spent 7 years investigating World Trade Center 7 and eventually concluded, yeah, it was ordinary office fires, essentially a failure at one strategic column, and the whole building came down, which is nonsense. But at least now we have a professional study at the Institute of Northern Engineering, University of Alaska Fairbanks, saying that it's nonsense and disproving the NIST hypothesis. So that's a significant step. And I did make a video about this, also pointing out, isn't it interesting that this significant step, proving that a government agency got something, not only got something wrong, but has effectively covered up the fact that they've got it wrong for all this time, isn't that newsworthy? Why are we not hearing this in the news? Why is this not a news item that people should be looking at? It's because, oh, well, look over here. Look, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the 9/11 mastermind from A to Z. Remember, he confessed after 183 waterboarding sessions. A trial date has now been set for him to stand trial for his part in 9/11 in January of 2021. So you'll see the BBC and Yahoo and all these other places talking about the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial. But they're not, by the way, you know, 18 months from now or whatever it is. But this actual study that's just been released, crickets. You don't hear anything.
You don't hear anything. Well, that's, you know, how everything is being reported, James. And, you know, there's so many distractions. They want people to follow what they want them to follow. And people don't go out on their own anymore. And I was listening to a conversation where people just have a tendency to listen to what supports their belief. And that's how we become so divided anymore. It's really kind of fascinating when you think about it, how people are so manipulated so easily through the social media and everything. And very few, critical thinking is becoming something of the past, I think.
Yes, it's an observation I made recently that I need to go into in more depth, but I think the bonds are being loosened. The fabric of society itself is being torn apart at the very seams, and that's not a good thing. I mean, that is something that will be chaos and bedlam, and unfortunately, it's usually through chaos that the would-be central planners would bring in their order.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you so much, James, for joining us today. And as always, we appreciate your views and insights. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to call Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And have a great weekend. Be safe and God bless.